I'm very grateful to be here with my family. We have one, we have four daughters, my wife Joy, and one of them is on the road right now on her way with her band, high school band, to the, where are they? The Grand Canyon, I think, today. They went up to the Grand Tetons and have come full circle, so it's a very exciting time for them. So anyway, we're just very happy to be here. I am a deacon with the Diocese of the Western Gulf Coast, which is based in Houston, and God willing, in November will be ordained as a priest. So I ask for your prayers as we continue in this journey of call and discernment. And the ministry that we've been a part of and have established in San Antonio is called Faithability, and it's a ministry for special needs families. We've been blessed with Sophia, our oldest daughter, who's 18 and just graduated from high school and will be a graduate student in high school for the next few years, to be a source of God's love and call to us as a family. So we want to share that with other families. We have a worship community that we have on Sundays at the Ark of San Antonio, which is a social service agency for off of Evers and 410. So we've started that, and then we have a number of other ministries that are hopefully going to be developed as well, including a home visitation program for families who can't get out. And then if some of you may have heard of the L'Arche community that was established by Jean Vanier back in 1965, and Henri Nouwen, if you've heard of him, wrote about his experience, transformational experience there, when he lived in Daybreak community in Canada. So we're finding that these ways of providing community in the faith context for people and families who have not felt fully connected to their community. So we're asked for your prayers for that ministry as well. And when Scott asked me to, invited me to come be with you all today, I took a peek at the readings and I said, wow, nuggets. Okay, I can do this. Because there are, you know, sometimes if it was the Gospel of John, you're kind of like, ugh. But thankfully, I had something to go by there that lends itself to my new developing preaching skills, I should say. So I was very grateful for that. And I think there were a number of them to choose from, and I was trying to figure out how to put that together. The walking by faith, walking in light, the mustard seed, all these things kind of were the immediate ones that I was gravitating towards. But I think as I continue to pray and read in the second letter to the Corinthians, the phrase of being at home with the Lord is one that struck me. One that I had heard before, but I had not fully paid a lot of attention to. So I thought this was an opportunity for me to do that. Ironically, I was out of town all week, and so I wrote this not at home, which I think gave me an interesting lens because I could kind of really sense what that meant. And I know that you had, you were away also, but you were in the Holy Land. You were in El Paso, which is my home. So we can see the glow still happening. And we're headed there this week, so anyway. What does that mean, though, to be at home? I think that sometimes in our society, current society, we kind of mix it up, confuse it, and maybe don't make the proper distinction of house and home, because, and I ask forgiveness from anybody here in the real estate business, because a house is distinct from a home, and sometimes they want to sell you a home, which I don't think can be done. A luxury home, a home on the lake, but what they're selling is structures. What you create, what we create in that place, in that dwelling, is a home. And I think that that's when we have that notion, that idea of being at home with the Lord, that's what it takes. It takes us to be thinking about not the structure, but about what happens in that space. You've heard here in San Antonio, and maybe some have traveled to Mexico, of mi casa es su casa, of being en casa. Even though casa is the structural term, it is also the same term that is used for home, for that sense of home, because generationally, everyone belongs to that same abode. Family is generation after generation. I think we are familiar perhaps with the concept of a sandwich, being a sandwich generation, right? Where we have our children living with us, as well as our parents, as my father lives with us. And we call ourselves the sandwich generation that are squeezed in. In the Mexican culture, it's called the whole enchilada. That's what home is about. You have grandparents and parents and uncles and aunts all being connected about that. So next time you hear the whole enchilada or you hear the sandwich generation, think of that. But being at home also means inviting people and making them feel welcome, the hospitality. If any of you have traveled, perhaps overseas even, you know that here you are, a foreigner in a foreign land, and yet people are very gracious about welcoming you into their home. In the Middle East, I've had an opportunity to travel there and to Africa and to Latin America and different places. I've been privileged and just so taken by the extent of the hospitality, the graciousness. You feel like royalty a lot of times. And I think sometimes, you know, that's something for us to be able to do as well. And we want to do that. When somebody comes to our house, we want to share with them stories about our family. We want to provide them with food, great recipes, wonderful food. We want them to feel like royalty. We want them to feel at home. And so when we're away from home, whether that's on a business trip, on vacation, or maybe in those in the military who have been assigned somewhere else than where you are, you have this certain yearning for what home is, right? I mean, you're on vacation, you're on the beach for a couple of weeks, but by the end of that time, you're ready to come back. You're ready to be in that place, even though that you were in this wonderful place, escaping maybe from the realities of your everyday life, of luxury accommodations, which probably you may not experience in your house. But that's somewhere where you belong. It's somewhere that you're connected to. And I think that that's really where we have that notion of home, of familiarity, of comfort, of something that I can connect with, relationships that can happen there. How do we define it then? Or how does home define us? A sense of place. Maybe it's geographical. When you go to a mountain, or you were raised in the mountains, and you go to a place where there's mountains, you feel at home there. For me, I grew up in El Paso, and when I went to the Holy Land, I felt like I was home, because it's rocks, it's desert, and so there was a connection there that I found. And I think that that's something, that familiarity, maybe it's a river, maybe it's a place, you know, that you used to go to. But it's a lot about belonging, about the cultural nuances, the values that you share with that place that makes you feel that way. If you, even if you haven't lived in a certain place in a long time, for example, I left El Paso for college. No, before that, actually. It's been about 20, over 20 or 30 years, I think, that I've lived there, but it's still home. Yeah? It's still a place that I call home. And no matter where you move to, that's kind of, even though my parents no longer live there either, it's the place that I connect with, that I identify with. It's the place that shaped me. And so no matter how many times you relocate or go, you know, there's that sense. But at the same time, I have to recognize that for many people, there is this notion for home to be a place maybe not an ideal one. Maybe there are painful memories of what home life is or was. And that needs to be recognized, that there's always this desire for home to be a place of comfort, to be a place of healing, to be a place of being able to relate. And maybe that doesn't happen, or maybe that didn't happen in the past. Those relationships were dysfunctional. Those relationships didn't happen in the way that were nurturing for us. So there's this broken home as well. And I would be remiss about talking about homes if I didn't talk about homelessness. People who have no homes. People who now, at this day and age, have been one or two generations already in that culture of being homeless, without a place of comfort. without a place that they can go to and call home and be in relationship with others, left walking the streets, going from one shelter to the next. And I'm not talking about people who choose that way of life, but I'm talking about children and women and others, men who are broken and have no place to go. And yet, for them and for others to strive for and to have this idea of home brings up positive images of what can be, of what should be, an ideal situation where you don't have to do anything to prove yourself. You simply can be, and that's good enough. We talk about also our church home, a place here where we gather as a community in relationship with each other, with a common goal to worship the Lord. We talk about a community in that home that supports each other, that somehow prays for each other, and that lives life together in pursuit of following the gospel of Jesus Christ. In the Ministry of Faithability that I shared with you about, our Sunday worship, which is called Holy Apostles Community Chapel, is about welcoming people. People who have not maybe found a home, people who have not felt at home in other places of worship. Our families are families with special needs, and sometimes the children will make noises or do things that probably may be disturbing. And in fact, with one family there has shared with us that they were asked to leave during a church service because their child was making noise. There's a lot of pain there. There's a family also who came one of the first times that we had the service and got there late. We started 11, but, 11:15-ish, they got there a little later than that. And afterwards, she told me, "We're just not used to going to church, so it's taking us a little time." She apologized, and I said, no apologies. Because when you're at home and you feel at home, that's the most important thing. So children can make noises. People can, our daughter likes to clap. She doesn't have verbal skills, but she loves to clap. And so they choose to, and that's how they pray. That's what's welcome there. It's not always easy, but it has to be done. And here in this Three Streams community also, I know that you've created here a spiritual community, a spiritual home for others. That you're creating that not just for yourselves, but really to reach out along this 35 corridor that Scott mentioned. That's, I think, what we're trying to really put together, this sense of home, of belonging, so that people will be able to come along. So real home is where relationships happen. Those relationships are good, and sometimes they are not so good. But we have that hope. We have that hope of love, of being rooted in love, that no matter how you mess up, no matter how many times you may fall short, that at the end of the day, there is someone there that can say, "I love you," and that you can say back to them, "I love you too." There are responsibilities in a real home, expectations, considerations, and assurances, all rooted in that hope of love. And so our understanding of being at home with the Lord also stems from our faith tradition. In the Old Testament, in the Garden of Eden, in Genesis, the Lord roams through the garden, being at home, desiring to be at home with his creation, right? And then we have various references to the house of the Lord, to the Ark of the Covenant, where God lives, the temple, where God is, the Holy of Holies. There is his presence. This later evolves then into this, into churches being built, these sacred places where God dwells. If you go to Europe or even some churches here in the United States, Roman Catholic, Anglican, you'll see Ecce Domus Dei, behold the house of God. Domus, I like to give lessons to my children sometimes about etymology, and domus is where we get domestic. House, home, home of God. As if this sacred space is here where God actually resides, you see. And so it's this desire, though, of God being at home with us, I think, that also strikes us. The Psalms also appeal to this notion of a dwelling place that we share with the Lord. And when this notion of this sacred space is certainly one to be revered, one to be lifted up, I think we also crave at the same time a personal level of intimacy with the Lord that does not limit the Lord's presence to one place, one building, but really opens it up, lifts up those boundaries, those restrictions of the Lord coming and being a part of our home and the home that we create for the Lord. This is what this idea of the communal of community getting together, but it's also some for us individually to have that sense. And finally, we have the image of home as being that final reward, that eternal destiny that we have of being with the Lord in that last day, on that last day in His heavenly kingdom. The idea of truly being at home is there. But the gospel also provides us with a focus on relationship and the welcoming as part of this intimacy that Jesus gives. Well, the disciples asked Jesus in the Gospel of John, chapter 1, 38, "Master, where do you live?" Jesus' answer is not over there, or I live in a house or a cave or wherever it is. His response is, "Come and see." It's an invitation to go to His home, to see where He lives, to be a part of this life. See, it's not in a way what we want. I don't think it was the response that they were looking for, but it's the invitation that Jesus gives. And sometimes for us, what we're looking for isn't always the invitation that Jesus has for us. There is a book, and some of you may be familiar with, and it's not necessarily biblically based and somewhat controversial. It's called The Poet by Khalil Gibran, a Lebanese poet back in the 1920s. And in this poem, there is a phrase that he said there that has always kind of stayed with me as part of my reflection. Say not God is in my heart, but rather say, I am in the heart of God. And when you see things that way, and when you live that way, I think things are a little different than what we think about usually when we think about our home and ourselves. For our salvation, of course, we must invite and accept Jesus into our hearts. But this response, this is a response when we do that, when we invite Jesus, it's a response, you see, because God's already initiated that invitation. God's already expressed His desire to be with us, to be at home with us. And so all that we do when we invite Jesus to be a part of our lives is recognizing that we are part of the life of God already. And for us, this is what it means to be at home with the Lord, to be in that God's eternal and merciful love given to us in Jesus through the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus. When we accept Jesus' invitation to enter into that deep and meaningful relationship with Him, when we are connected to Him, when we know that we are loved, accepted, and forgiven, and when we can be who we truly are as ourselves, as God's creation, that is to be at home with the Lord. We are at home with the Lord when we welcome others to do the same, to share this experience, this commitment to life in the Lord, and to accept God's abundant love for us. And so, I invite you to take some time, take a moment, sometime today, this week, to reflect on what it means to be at home with the Lord. What does this mean for your life? How do you enter this moment and experience of being and not having to do, simply be with God? And as His followers, as followers of the risen Jesus, may we use this experience, this commitment, to invite others to do the same.